I hope you're enjoying the notice sheet at the moment. I'm told last week's was a belter. Thank you, Alan Eaglesham. Someone about two snowmen looking at each other and one of them saying, I can't believe this just all started with a snowflake. So our theme for this Advent is Night of Nights. We're focusing in on that one night when God became part of creation. And we've worked our way through various different themes over the past 3 weeks. We looked at Mary and how Mary's life typified the Sabbath. And the Sabbath speaks to us actually of the end of creation, for in the Genesis story, Sabbath is made on the last day. So the pinnacle of God's creation is a day off, which if you're a working person sounds like a good idea, does it not? And I know I've been having conversations with many of you about trying to turn the wick down, trying to back off from the frenetic activity and have space to enjoy. There was a moment this week in Dobby's. We're going for the Christmas tree. You know what it's like? We've found a slot of time. We've gone out. We've picked up Asher from he was at Dobby's with the nursery. And we've got the baby Gabriel, which always makes you feel a bit Christmassy. I know it's the angel, but you know, it's kind of both. And we're going around Dobby's, and I've noticed these enormous animals, okay? And then I stop for a while, and I just stop and take in the scent of the Christmas trees, and there is an elf on minimum wage just standing at the Santa's grotto. Hope she gets better than minimum wage, but she didn't look that happy. She did have a clipboard, so maybe it had all the bad stuff on it, you know? And when I stopped for a moment, I noticed, because as I said, it's like standing in a zoo, and then I noticed that beside the 8-foot camel was the baby Jesus. Now, I have to say, camels would be scary beasts if it was all in scale, because Jesus was about 2-fist size next to the 8-foot camel, but he was there. He looked a bit traditional, a bit Victorian, but he was there. And there was Mary in her, you know, regulation light blue, and there was Joseph, and the other people round about the manger. And I thought, do you know what? If I don't enjoy this moment, it's going to pass me by. So I just did that thing and hooked into that restful, loving, peaceful place in our Father and stopped for a moment and enjoyed the fact that at this time of year, people can't get rid of the name of Jesus. And by the way, for those of you with an allergy to Xmas, see that X? That's the old way you write Jesus, if you couldn't write. So even Xmas has got Jesus in it. The Sabbath and Mary. Now, the second thing that we're looking at was about God keeping his promises and looking at the prophets and how we ran through all those different prophecies. In the book of Isaiah, in the book of Micah, the book of Zechariah, the book of Genesis. We also read from the Psalms. All the way through the Old Testament is this thread of someone who's promised. And not just someone who's promised, but where they're going to be born, who they're going to be. That they're going to be born of a virgin. That their hands and feet are going to be pierced for our wrongdoing. We looked at that more at the when we looked at shame at the meeting place and read our way through Isaiah 53, and it's almost as if Isaiah, 600 years before Jesus was born, saw the crucifixion. God keeps his promises. And last week we looked at that passage where the angel speaks to Joseph in the dream and says, you shall name him Jesus. We looked at what prophecy was, that as much as a prediction of the future, it's also a proclamation that carries authority. So sometimes the prophet says something and it's going to be. I was thinking about this week in the context of Johnny and Kate going up to Kirkhill and Kiltarlity up there in the Beauly Firth, up near Inverness. And I was thinking one of the things that will be a deal maker for them is the words that they carry in. And not just words that they've got from other people, but things they declare about that place and hold out for themselves. And so prophecy has that predictive element to it, but some of that predictive element is because what we say will be. And so there's certain things about this church that are the fruits of some of you who just would not be satisfied with where things were, but were longing for something deeper, more loving, more worshipful, more Jesus-centered, even given our thankfulness for the people who've gone before. For we get to stand on their shoulders, but then we have to determine how high we reach once we do. And we looked at what prophecy was. And I'd encourage you, if you're praying about Johnny and Kate, just filter those words through to them. Okay. We looked at Jesus, the name. We looked at Isaiah. The people who've walked in darkness have seen a great light. We looked at Isaiah 30:15 in that first week, that in quietness and trust is your strength, going back to the Sabbath. We looked at the fact, as I was speaking after speaking at my uncle's funeral, that God's saying, don't dwell on the past. See, I'm doing a new thing among you. And I was amazed that my uncle had picked that as a reading at his funeral. So, that's the recap. Now we're getting on to the fresh stuff. You up to speed now? Because I'm aware that we've got a lot of people. Today we're talking about roots. Roots, roots, roots. Now, when you see a tree, you understand that underneath the ground, there are roots. Yeah? There are roots. Johnny's a tree specialist, and he was telling me that there was, you have to be really careful when a tree falls over. Because sometimes what people do is they stand in the hole where the roots were and use their chainsaw to cut the tree. And then what happens to the roots? And they're heavy enough to squish you. So you've got to be super careful. Because the root system of a tree, Johnny's gone, I don't remember telling him that. That was ages ago. The thing about a root system of a tree is it's enormous. Now, this is an old mining community, so the place is surrounded by silver birch, and I'm reliably told that silver birch can put the root system into fairly unpromising shallow soil. But there are other trees which have much deeper roots. And sometimes the root systems of trees that live in difficult circumstances grow very slowly and persistently. In the garden at the Mount, it's got 9 trees. Of some size. Most of them sycamore, which I know farmers see as weeds, because they just grow and grow and grow and grow. Some of them are getting huge. And underneath those are roots, and those roots hold the tree firm. And we have roots as well as people. And the roots that we have are about the people who've gone before, our ancestors. Has anyone here done any work on their family tree? Nobody? 1, 2, 3, 4. You're all starting, oh yeah. You know, you find out that there's some bits and pieces in your family. And I know a few bits and pieces. I know that I'm mostly German and Welsh. What a combination, huh? Although my German roots go from before Germany was a country and it was all the Austro-Hungarian Empire, but that's another thing. But roots matter. I don't know if you've ever been at that point where you've realized that someone's your ancestor and it kind of weighs on you. You sort of think, oh my goodness me. Remember my dad telling me that one of my distant relatives was Dylan Thomas's best friend, Dylan Thomas the poet. And I accidentally took a holiday in Milkwood. You know, underneath Milkwood, you know, the Richard Burton things. Those of you of a certain age will know what I'm talking about. Others will be going, what? But Dylan Thomas was a Welsh poet, and his best buddy was a relative of mine. And so I was standing there, I thought, wow, someone who's related to me walked these paths and visited that house. That's extraordinary. Wrote letters to the guy who lived there. Roots. And as we think about how God keeps his promises, I want us to have a look at his roots. Now, all of us have been exposed to the idea, whether we believe it or not, that Jesus is God somehow. Have we not? We may believe or disbelieve it, but is anybody here unaware that somehow Jesus is God, according to the Christians, be they deluded or correct or somewhere in between, whatever that might be? God keeps his promises. And we're going to have a look at that in terms of this idea that Jesus is God, but he's not just God in any sense of the word. So this isn't just, because sometimes we think about God as being the kind of ultimate being, and then we try and chuck attributes at God as if we all could figure out what God is. It's fascinating, actually, when I engage with people who are atheists, they have a very clear idea of the God they don't believe in. Have you ever noticed that? So I'll meet an atheist and we'll be in discussion, and I love chatting with atheists, I really do, and I respect them. I think their point of view takes a lot of faith. And I'll be talking with them, and they will say, how can God be a loving God with all the suffering in the world? And immediately I've learned two things. First, if there was a God, he'd do something about suffering. Second, if there was a God, he'd be loving. And I'm thinking, wow. And so if there is a God, he's cold and capricious and doesn't want to do anything about it, and I can't believe in a God like that. And you realize that many people are atheists not because they can't believe in the idea of God, it's just they look at the world and take a step back and say, the God of this world is not someone I want to believe in, which is a very different thing. So I want us to have a look at Jesus' roots. And Jesus' roots are tied up in this great project called Israel. Now, some of you may have been brought up with a kind of idea that somehow Israel was God's experiment that kind of went horribly wrong. And he kind of tried it out with Israel, and they're a feckless bunch, so he found somebody else. You know, a bit like God had picked the Irish and then come up a bit short. Or people from Newton Grange, or, you know, he just tried it out. I'm going to send my glory to Nitin. I'll speak to them from the top of the Bing. Give them a few instructions and see if they can do it. Oh, oops, plan B. And that's actually not how it goes. If you've ever been brought up with the idea that Israel was kind of some stuttering failure, oops, because that's not what this book talks about. God is very open about the failings of Israel, but then just imagine if someone had written a book about my failings, or yours for that matter. It would make for some juicy reading, I would imagine. Especially if accessed thoughts and stuff, the perceptive among you are now looking terrified. And so, what we're going to do is we're going to have a look at Jesus in his... We're going to read a bit of the Christmas story that usually gets passed over. So Israel is not some failed experiment where God tried to give his glory and presence to a group of people who then mucked it up. They did muck it up, but not comprehensively. And indeed, it matters that Jesus was a Jew. You see, when Jesus arrived, we understand perhaps he was God come as a human being, whether we believe it or not. God incarnate, God in flesh, literally. You know that word incarnate, you know, carne, chili con carne, flesh, chili with flesh, incarnate, in flesh. Language lesson. And made you hungry at the same time. But what God does there is a very specific thing. You see, back in the book of Genesis, God makes a promise to Abraham. Do you remember I said a few weeks ago, as Christians we tend to go back to the creation, but really the creation is a preamble for the writer in Genesis. This is the story of the flood, all that stuff, to get to the key guy, and the key guy's name is Abraham. God makes promises to Abraham, and what he says to him in the covenant in Genesis 22:18, as he says to Abraham and Sarah, who have been unable to have a baby of their own, he says, through your offspring, all peoples on earth will be blessed. To fulfill this promise, what would God have to do? He'd have to find a way through Abraham's children, and Abraham and Sarah can't have children at this point. He is saying to them, through your offspring, every family on planet Earth will be blessed. All of them. Every single one of them. We made that clear. Without exception. So that promise is weighing heavy on the hearts of the Jewish people. And as I explained last week, they had some idea through the book of Daniel when the Messiah would come. It would come about 490 years after Daniel's sayings in the book of Daniel. And so around the time of Jesus, they're looking for someone to arrive. They're looking for someone to fulfill this promise that through the offspring of Abraham, all the peoples on earth would be blessed. So now I'm going to read to you the beginning of the New Testament. And this works as a kind of cusp between the Old and New Testaments. And here in the book of Matthew, Matthew starts out his gospel with a list. Are you ready? This is the sort of reading that I can't give away. You'll see why in a... This is the very beginning of Matthew 1, verse 1, opening of the New Testament. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac the father of Jacob, and Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers, and Judah the father of Perez and Zerah by Tamar, and Perez the father of Hezron, and Hezron the father of Ram. And anybody think calling a boy that? Ram. It's got a certain thing to it, hasn't it? Next time, Diane. And Ram the father of Amminadab, that's out. And Amminadab the father of Nahshon. And Nahshon the father of Salmon. And Salmon the father of Boaz by Rahab. And Boaz the father of Obed by Ruth. And Obed the father of Jesse. And Jesse the father of David the king. And David was the father of Solomon by wife of Uriah. And Solomon the father of Rehoboam. And Rehoboam the father of Abijah. And Abijah the father of Asaph. And Asaph the father of Jehoshaphat. And Jehoshaphat the father of Joram. And Joram, the father of Uzziah, Uzziah, the father of Jotham, Jotham, the father of Ahaz, and Ahaz was the father of Hezekiah, and Hezekiah was the father of Manasseh, and Manasseh, the father of Amos, and Amos, the father of Josiah, and Josiah, the father of Jeconiah, and his brothers, at the time of the deportation to Babylon. And after the deportation to Babylon, Jeconiah was the father of Shealtiel. And then Shealtiel was the father of Zerubbabel, and Zerubbabel was the father of Abiud, and Abiud was the father of Eliakim, and Eliakim the father of Azor, and Azor the father of Zadok, and Zadok the father of Akim, and Akim the father of Eliud, and Eliud the father of Eleazar, and Eleazar the father of Mathan, Mathan the father of Jacob, Jacob the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom Jesus was born, who's called the Christ. That is the sort of passage we skip over. We go, oh, shut you, it's a list of names. But let me explain why this is important. First of all, it's divided into 14 generations. Okay? 14 generations from Abraham to David. 14 generations from David to the exile in Babylon. 14 generations from the exile in Babylon to Jesus. You might go, well, that's all very cozy. However, in Jesus' day, people knew their genealogies. People knew their genealogies. They knew where they came from. Have you ever met an American? Okay? Americans are never American. They aren't. They're Norwegian. Or they're Dutch. Or they're, you know, they're Spanish. They're Irish if they come from Chicago. If, you know, there's so many different nationalities. Why is that? Because they know their roots. And Jewish people in Jesus' day knew their genealogies. They knew them. So what's presented here is a story which would be understood by the Jews of their day. There's a few things to say about this list. People didn't know their genealogies. And that 14, 14, 14 thing is an aid to memory. You know, because you kind of got, oh, you haven't got 14 fingers. You could use four toes, but you got the idea that there's a series of names that you remember. And it is a fascinating list. We'll come back to the 14 thing in a moment. Okay? It's a fascinating list. Firstly, there's picking and choosing going on. The writer knows that he's missing people out. So this list is not complete. It's not intended to be complete. That was never the idea. The idea is to sketch the distance. I guess the really boring relatives have been left out. So some of those generational gaps of two or three cover hundreds of years in terms of biblical chronology. So he picks and chooses. It contains the most famous people of the faith: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, who God will rename Israel. It's very interesting that Jacob preserves his original name. It really means cheat or twister, or, you know, you won't want to play poker with Jacob. Jacob is Jewish for dodgy punter. And even though God renames him Israel, which means he who wrestles with God, and if you know the name of Jacob, you'll understand why he gets that name, he's still known as dodgy punter. I love the fact that it's the God of the Father of Nations, he who laughs, and dodgy punter. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So it contains the famous. Jesus, even though God is his father, by his human father, Joseph, he is related to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Of course he is. Every Jew could trace their lineage back to Jacob because he was the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. There's also people in there who are not so famous. Very few of you will know the comings and goings of Amminadab or of Shealtiel. Even some of the more famous ones to the Jewish audience at the time, Zerubbabel would have been famous to them at the time as a great high priest, and Zadok as well. But we tend not to know too much about them. Well, if you know the history of the exile, you'll know that Zerubbabel was the high priest when they come back from exile. There are infamous people in here. And interestingly enough, the kings that Jesus is related to are listed as good guy, bad guy, good guy, bad guy. You got it? Good guy, bad guy. I'm telling you, there's some really nasty pieces of work in there. What about Ahaz? Ahaz was the father of Hezekiah. And just before the exile, Ahaz decides to protect the southern kingdom of Judah after Israel's been taken away. He decides to protect by allying himself with the Assyrians. He brings the worship of the Assyrian gods into the temple of God in Jerusalem. He is so infamous that his body wasn't even buried in the place where kings' bodies would be buried in Judah. It did not merit that. The infamous. And yet also, there are those who are good. And Ahaz had a son called Hezekiah, and he reinstituted the worship of God in the temple. Hezekiah was so good. In the middle of Isaiah, you get this wrangle between Hezekiah and God, and Hezekiah asks God not to take him in illness, and God gives him 15 more years to rule. And Hezekiah is this late flourishing of the kingship in Judah, which will bring blessing and healing to the people, though it is not to last. This list contains women. Perhaps most interestingly, Rahab. Now, Rahab, remember we were looking at the story of Caleb and Joshua going into the promised land? The spies in the promised land are put up by a lady who has a house in the city wall of Jericho. And her name is Rahab. Traditionally, we know her as a prostitute. The other meaning of that word, I believe, is innkeeper, which in my book is quite a bit of difference. And it's kind of like prostitute, innkeeper, prostitute, innkeeper. That makes a difference, doesn't it? We're not entirely sure. But guaranteed, the issue here is to draw women into the story of the covenant. Ruth gets a mention. And this, of course, is prefiguring the fact that Mary's going to get a mention. And, of course, both Rahab and Ruth were not Jews. Ruth was a Moabite. She was a Moabite who'd married a Jew who'd run from the famine in Bethlehem and then had come back with her to look after her mother-in-law when she returned to Bethlehem. This is an extraordinary story. And a Boaz that Ruth marries. And Boaz has Obed, and Obed has Jesse, and Jesse is the dad of David. And trust me, this whole list revolves around David. David. Now, when I was at school, I was a 70s kid, so about every 10th boy was called David. There was David, John, Mark, Colin, Andrew, and that just about cleared the... James. That cleared the class. William. You know, 70s kids. 70s kids. It was kind of like, we're going to give you a plain name. None too fancy. And now you go to school, and I did hear a story of a kid whose name was spelled L-A-A. And the teacher pronounced it La, and she said, it's not La, it's Ladasha. We have come a long way, boys and girls. Shall I tell you my other favorite name one? I love this one. This is from Port Glasgow, and this affects real people, so I'm going to be very gentle about this. But there are twins in Port Glasgow who are called Armani and Versace McClatchy. I'm saying nothing else, okay? Just pass that to one side. And a big thank you to the head teacher from Greenock Way who passed that on. Anyway, these lists are built around the name David, which seems like a very ordinary name. But the thing is that this word David gets split up. Now, you got to understand Hebrew, you don't write the vowels, okay? So Mark would be Merk, okay? That's how you write it. You wouldn't bother with the ah. You just have to learn that. So vowels aren't written. Which would have made poor Ladasha L dash. In fact, you don't put punctuation in either, so just be L. Which is actually the word for Lord, which would be blasphemous. So she'd maybe not get that. She'd have to put someone else with it. So David becomes DVD, okay? Not a digital versatile disc, okay? Becomes DVD. And every consonant in the Hebrew language has a number attached to it, okay? Trust me. Not like Scrabble, it's not point scoring. It's just to do with where they fall in the alphabet. DVD is 4, 6, 4. And 4 plus 6 plus 4 is? How many generations from Abraham to David? How many generations from David to the second exile? And how many from the second exile to Jesus? 14. Okay, how many consonants are there in David? 3, DVD. How many sets of 14s in the genealogy? See, the writer Matthew is going, it's David, it's David, it's David. Would you please get your heads together? This is about David. You see, you read it and you're just going, what a funny bunch of names. Oh, I know that one. I know that one. Ooh. Okay? But actually, this whole genealogy is saying to these Jewish people who know their genealogies, and they would get this, okay? The 14 generations, that's a 4. The 14 generations, that's a 6. The 14 generations, that's a 4. 4 plus 6 plus 4 is 14. Good grief! God's up to something here. It's all about David. Who is David? David is the one who's coming. And what does the prophet Joel promise? That God is going to rebuild David's house. They knew that. That was a messianic prophecy. They were waiting for that to happen. It gets quoted in the book of Acts. So you've got these 3 14s that mirror the 3 consonants in David, okay? You'll be tested on this next week, right? And David itself means, when we named Asher David, we gave him a name that meant blessed, that's Asher, beloved, that's David. So the whole of this is based around a name that means beloved. He's saying the one who follows David, who is beloved of God, he is here, Jewish people. We can look at it. Here's a structure to remind you. We're not chucking everybody in. We're just reminding you the 14 generations between each, between Abraham, between the exile, between what's coming now and King David. Missed him out. Because David is the important guy. He's the fulcrum. But David couldn't fulfill the promise that was over him. Because David, King David, the greatest Jewish king there had ever been, was just a point forward to the real King of the Jews. And he wasn't called David, he was called? He wasn't called David, he was called? For everybody of you listening on the podcast, that was underwhelming. Now, and that's how this is built. It's about roots. For many of you, the last time you gathered here in this church was to remember another David, David Rowley. We honored his memory here, and we gave thanks. We said goodbye. Poignant moment. And then here today, we're baptizing Rachel. We'll get to that in a bit. But as we think back to the people who've gone before us, friends, roots matter. Roots matter. The famous, the infamous, the good, the bad, the men and the women who have built into our family and we have become what we are. But something incredible happens when we put our trust in Jesus. Is that his family becomes our family. Paul would go on to write to the early church saying that by faith we are more the heirs of Abraham than the Jewish people are by blood. That we are drawn in to this great Jewish story. Because when Jesus arrived, he didn't come to cancel what had happened with the Jews, that failed experiment that was left half done in the chemistry lab of time. What he came to do was to fulfill the promise that had been made to Abraham at the start, to fulfill the promise of the covenants that had been made with Israel, to fulfill the law, to fulfill the promise, to fulfill the tabernacle, which was a sign of what was to come. We'll get back to that later. There's some other point. Jesus came as a fulfillment of the promise. He was there, and he, born in a manger, was going to take over the throne of David. Born in David's own hometown, Bethlehem. And when Jesus said, I am the bread of life, he was thinking about where he was born, because Bethlehem means the house of bread. And in the center of the temple, in the holy place, the sign of God's presence was partly represented by a loaf of bread. Are you getting tingly this morning? So today we baptize Rachel. Rachel, famously, Jacob's missus. Rachel's got a fantastic biblical name. Hannah was the mother of Samuel, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, of Israel's prophets. And Rowley, I haven't found him yet, but I'll keep looking. Rachel, Hannah. We baptized her today into Jesus' family of faith. We baptized her into the promises of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The promises made to the Jewish nation. The promises fulfilled in Jesus and then opened out, because the extraordinary story of the Bible in its Old and New Testaments is how the God of Israel became the King of the world. That's it. That this strange little group of nomads who settled in the Middle East and worshiped just one God God proved them right. And all the other gods of the Assyrians and the Persians and the Egyptians and the Greeks, they all melt away. For those gods are many and have all the flaws of human beings. But here, instead of making God like humans, God has become human and led us into his glory. That family of faith is all about Jesus. The roots of the Jewish faith are all about Jesus. Or as they would call him, Joshua, the one who saves his people. All about Jesus. And that's what happens on the night of nights. Thank you very much for your attention. God bless you all.